the secular medical establishment has convinced people that a humane way of ending suffering in a patient who's terminally ill is to simply withhold nutrition and hydration.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves.
And Victor, we have some exciting news on the horizon. A Catholic hospital called the Home for the Relief of Suffering in Italy is coming to America. In the coming years, a hospital will open in Howell, Michigan, that will respect all innocent human life, and it will house a medical school that'll be passionately pro-life.
That's very exciting, Brad. And it'll be a medical school that is truly faithful, like you said, to the sanctity of human life. And it provides a suitable medical facility for physicians and ancillary medical providers to practice as faithful Catholic professionals in our secular society.
And not only that, according to media reports, it'll include an embryo orphanage, a center for unborn children, a birthing unit, and a family medicine practice.
Yeah, and of particular interest is a unit for patients who have suffered serious brain injuries named after Terry Schiavo.
Terry, the sister of Bobby Schindler, was intentionally killed in 2005 after living for years with a serious brain injury. Her horrible and inhumane death sparked a global outcry.
That's right. And joining us today is Bobby Schindler, the president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, a Paige Comstock Cunningham Senior Fellow at Americans United for Life, and an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Bobby advocates for the medically vulnerable in honor of Terry Schiavo, his sister. We're also joined by Jerry Palazzolo. He has over 40 years of experience in executive leadership and the delivery of healthcare services. He received a Master of Healthcare Administration from Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, and has presented at national and local forums and published several articles on current issues and trends in delivery of healthcare services. We're also joined by Dr. George Michescu. He's a director of perioperative services, professor and vice chair of anesthesiology at the Ochsner LSU Health Science Center in Shreveport, LA. He received his medical degree from the Kansas City University College of Osteopathic Medicine.
Jerry, Dr. George, and Bobby, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry. Now, this is an enormous undertaking that you all are involved in, but that's probably an understatement. Please briefly tell us a little more about that.
Thanks, Brad. By profession, I'm a hospital administrator, and a few decades ago, experienced the transition of Catholic healthcare to becoming much more secularized and becoming much more corporate. It used to be congregationally run. The Catholic healthcare system started putting an emphasis on finances, and it had a marked impact on the quality of care and the delivery of care and the compassion that used to be shown. And there was a mantra way back when this first started, and it was no margin, no mission. And it's basically, if we didn't have money, we couldn't follow the mission. And that's just completely backward from where all these systems started. They started generally with a group of nuns that came over to America with nothing in their pockets. They were blessed, and now they're multi-billion dollar healthcare systems. So I was frustrated as a young administrator with all of that, but became aware that Padre Pio had built this amazing hospital over in Italy called the Home for the Relief of Suffering. And I had never heard of it before, but as I delved into it more, I saw that it really was a different focus. It was a focus on seeing the twice Jesus, as he said, in the patients, the suffering and wretched Jesus, and being the hands of Jesus. Long story short, I went over, I met with him, I followed up. I told him I felt like I was being an instrument for Padre Pio to do that. They discerned along with me, and they agreed with that. And Cardinal Burke joined us in that process. He has been our Episcopal advisor since we signed on to this and was a signatory of our collaboration agreement with this Vatican-owned hospital over in San Giovanni Rotondo, Italy, the Home for the Relief of Suffering. And we've worked together since then. Now, the addition of the medical school to that vision was really from Cardinal Burke from the very beginning. And he said, Jerry, you've got to expand this mission because as healthcare has secularized, so has the formation of physicians in Catholic medical schools. About 4 years ago, this Dr. George Michescu approached us because he had read something in LifeSite that Cardinal Burke had mentioned about the medical school. And he called me and he said, I have built osteopathic medical schools. I've got the model. I know how to do it. And I've always wanted to do a faithful Catholic one. We have a facility that we're in the process. We will close on it in June of 2026 that will house both our medical center and our medical school. So that's a little bit of a bring up to date as to where we came from and where we are right now.
Well, let me just interject here that as a non-Catholic, Cardinal Burke is one of my American heroes. He has been so true to the Catholic faith and advanced causes that benefit not only Catholics, but all of us.
Well, I think if I can add a little bit to the need, because there's a need, a desperate need in this country and around the world for physicians who will stand for life, who will stand for dignity, and medical schools that will teach human life from conception until natural death and not give in to what's correct or what's politically correct or popular, but actually teach the truth. And that's what we're here to do.
And that should be underscored, I think, for people of all faiths who will be going to this hospital, who better to be treated by than a physician and staff that support Catholic principles of the sanctity of life? Especially as we get older and we're facing issues that come along with being an older person. I've seen my treatment change in hospitals simply based upon my age. And I think patients will certainly feel more comfortable knowing that they're in a secure facility that values their lives.
Yeah, we only have to look to Canada to see the perversion of what the medical system can become. Canada now is number two in the world for organ harvesting, secondary to euthanasia, only secondary to China. So that's really not a great club to be in. We find that medicine does what's easy. It forgets about older people. It forgets about human dignity. It forgets about the disabled and the people that are difficult to care for, the children of a lesser God, as I've termed it. What you see going on in Canada, what you see going on in Belgium, in parts of Europe are more reminiscent of Germany in 1938 than they should be in healthcare in 2024. And it really, and medical schools don't teach otherwise. I mean, the secular medical establishment has convinced people that a humane way of ending suffering in a patient who's terminally ill is to simply withhold nutrition and hydration, right? Shut off their food in the feeding tube, shut off their water, and let them slowly starve to death and die of thirst. And my thought experiment has always been, well, if that's true, then why don't we use that for capital punishment in jurisdictions where it's allowed? Just simply cut off the prisoner's food and water if that's a humane way to treat people. And when you look at it that way, it's barbaric. And yet that's what the medical establishment has determined is good science, in quotation marks, obviously.
And, you know, the Catholic Church has really been consistent all throughout from the time of Christ on. They've really been very, very straightforward in what the teachings are. And it's very consistent with natural law, but it's not taught in the medical schools. And when George and I first started talking about this, we came to the conclusion that what we really needed to do was to create a seminary for the healing ministers of the church. So our students are going to graduate with the equivalent of a master's level education in Catholic bioethics and medical theology. So Each year we will graduate 180 students that will go out across the country into these nominally Catholic hospitals and into secular hospitals also, knowing what the church truly teaches, so that when they get into these and the administration and the leadership of the hospitals go in a wrong direction, they will say, no, that is not what the church teaches. So we need to arm them. And if you want to come to our medical school, you're going to have to be willing to invest into a lot more work in learning this. But you're going to want to do it. You're not going to come to our medical school if you don't really want to know. So that, I think, is the way that we're going to change the culture from a grassroots effort to bring us back to our roots. Because every year, think about that, 180 people go out into the country and they are formed and they're armed and they know what the church teaches and they can go ahead and follow through on that.
So from a purely secular perspective, these physicians will go out and promulgate true values supporting life and dignity of the disabled, of the the homeless, the forgotten, the demented, the people who suffer from Down syndrome. I mean, we know that there's a literal genocide going on unborn children that are disabled with trisomy 21, Down syndrome, trisomy 18, and other genetic abnormalities. The womb is an extraordinarily dangerous place to be.
We do indeed. Absolutely. And I want you, the listener, to listen to what Dr. George has been telling us. You may think that these are exaggerations, but they are all documented truths of what's going on, especially in Canada. And we have watched as states like California and others have tried to emulate in ways to kill vulnerable patients by euthanasia. And so far, some of that has been thwarted. But if we don't stand watchful and active, we will have that same thing here. So now I think we've addressed the issue of the difference between a faithful medical school and a regular medical school. But is there anything else you want to add to our previous discussion before we move on?
So part of our job is to develop residencies that are also consistent with Catholic values and truths, none more so prominent than in obstetrics and gynecology. The contemporary organized bodies for obstetrics and gynecology seem to center and put abortion as their highest value. And we are going to create residency training programs that do not compel physicians to learn and perform techniques of abortion. 90% obstetricians and gynecologists do not perform abortions. So it is not an essential skill. And the technical skills that happen to be used in abortion are also used in other surgical therapies not related to abortion. So we can train high quality physicians without having to compromise their consciences and our values. So we'll create these faithful residencies in things like obstetrics, gynecology, pediatrics, family medicine, internal medicine, the psychiatry, the areas that are most impacted by the deteriorating culture. We'll also develop other residencies like radiology, anesthesiology, surgery, but these are less impacted by these social movements than, for instance, pediatrics.
Jerry, out of curiosity, does a student have to be of the Catholic faith to attend the school?
No, we won't require anybody to be of any faith. I think we will attract more, and I think that we'll have relationships with the Newman Guide colleges that really will bring people in that are kind of geared towards what we're doing. But no, anybody can come in of any faith. They have to accept our philosophy and the teachings of the church. George made a really key point too. We could go without mentioning the word Catholic through this whole thing and have it be exactly the way that it is going, because God created nature. The natural law really is very, people say the church and science don't meld. Just the opposite. They are completely aligned with one another. So we don't even need to mention the word Catholic. If we stay consistent with supporting natural law, we are absolutely good.
What is the target date then for opening the medical school?
Well, assuming that we can get the financing that we need, the earliest we can open would be in the fall of 2028. And that's the target date right now.
Dr. George, you mentioned that the school will combat the elements of Western civilization, and I think we all know what that means, the eroding of sanctity of life and ethics that are related to that. Can you briefly expand on that, specifically how you're going to safeguard these values and ethics?
Well, we teach the science. I mean, there's a couple of good examples. One example is in vitro fertilization. People on both sides of the political aisle have adopted this as a cause celeb, and everybody wants unlimited access to in vitro fertilization. They don't understand the science, right? We know that an embryo is a human being, a living human being. Now, maybe this human being's 5 days old, but they're still a living human being nevertheless. I mean, you hear a lot of euphemisms about, oh, clumps of cells or embryo itself being a euphemism, but it's still a living human being. It's not a cat or a chicken, and it's not dead. So we know that nationwide, the numbers are hard to approach, but there are probably between 1 and 2 million frozen human beings awaiting an uncertain fate. So by teaching these, the physicians will understand, oh yeah, that is a human. It's not something else. And there are other examples like this. I mean, look at what medicine has brought us with the gender ideology movement. Until 2013, gender dysphoria was considered a disorder. It was called gender identity disorder. Then on the basis of opinion polls and advocacy from gender groups, It was changed to gender dysphoria and believed by the American Psychiatric Association to be a normal condition of a mind of different gender that's trapped in the wrong body. Just on its face, that sounds preposterous. And obviously there's no science to support that, but current gender-affirming care, if you will, which hopefully will be curtailed with the new administration, is supporting a psychiatric disorder by promoting that psychiatric disorder. It's very akin to giving liposuction to an anorexic. They may feel better for a little bit, but at the end of the day, you haven't treated their issues and their disease only becomes worse. And you feel very sad for these people because they've been misled by the medical community. They're not getting the care they need and they end up destroying themselves and other people. We know that in Sweden, even in a society that widely accepts without any social stigma a gender transition, the suicide rate amongst people who have undergone gender transition is 19 times the general population.
Wow.
This is not the way science should act, right? Science should help these individuals with their issues, but the current medical scientific regime, if you will, refuses to even consider settled science on these gender issues. But you see in Europe, they're moving away from it, right? Because in the United Kingdom, which was very strong on gender transition several years ago, they've abandoned this because they see that they are hurting people. So we hope that by just teaching the truth, we can influence the medical industrial complex, if you will, back towards what it should be doing.
On the list of things that you will do, it says that there will be an embryo orphanage. So does that mean you will be doing embryo adoption?
Yeah, correct. These embryos sit frozen, and the longer they sit, the more their health suffers. And we know that couples simply abandon these embryos. Of course, sometimes they become involved in litigation because they're considered property. It's interesting that judges that have had to resolve some of these cases where, say, a couple breaks up and there's embryos, what to do with the embryos, they look to laws written from the early 1800s because that was the last time in the United States that it was legal to have humans as property. And it's just repulsive. So these embryos, I mean, sometimes they're discarded, they die. And the really repulsive part is sometimes they're donated for research. And again, we haven't seen that since Germany in the 1940s, human beings for research. So it's our goal to try and place these embryos with loving families to be born and raised. I mean, I think on record, there's a young woman who was a frozen embryo for 30 years before being gestated. And again, this is part of the unsettled teaching of the Catholic Church. They don't quite understand or know what to do with this either. And we've heard widely divergent viewpoints from the NCBC and other Catholic authorities about what happens with these children that are frozen. And we didn't create the IVF industry, but it is here. And these people are here. And what do you do with these children? And the Catholic Church itself hasn't really decided. However, there is enough Episcopal support, particularly in the Diocese of Lansing, to proceed with this, to bring these children to gestation and to have a chance at life. So that's part of the master plan of the medical center.
Bobby, thank you for your patience. Let's turn some questions toward you. What is your role in all of this?
Well, good question. Well, I think you can see why we're so excited working with Jer and Dr. George and the whole team at CHI. When Jer and I met, Jer spoke to me about the possibility if they do, or when they do, establish a Padre Pio hospital here in the United States to establish a rehab center, a rehabilitation center in my sister's memory. And that is something that we've always wanted to do. So that's kind of how the initial conversation started. And then as Jared had mentioned, we've been here for the duration, just, you know, working to get, once the hospital's up and running, to establish this rehab center as part of the hospital. So after Terry died, our family started the Life and Hope Network, and we've been serving as patient advocates. And much of what you're hearing today, this discussion between Jer and Dr. George, is really the cases that we're seeing and the families that call us for help is really a consequence of this failure to properly form our physicians, because we're seeing this real lack of shared values, so to speak, between patient, family, and doctors today. And so many decisions are being based on a person's utility. So for example, if someone experiences a brain injury, a significant brain injury, the decision is made in a very quick period of time whether to continue treatment. And this is despite all the research that we're seeing. You know, a lot of it's based on utility. More and more, we're looking at the value of money rather than the value of the human person, and decisions are made accordingly. So I think why we're so excited is because with the hospital, with the medical school, and with the rehab center that we're going to start, families have peace of mind that they're going to come and get proper treatment. They never have to worry about a treatment stop, because we look at somebody as having a long-term process and caring for them. And we're going to provide them the best medicine, the best treatment, the best therapy possible to see if, in fact, we can help that person heal, whether it's a brain injury or some other type of catastrophic injury that has, you know, affected their well-being. So we're just really excited and, as I said, blessed and, you know, looking forward to the next couple of years and getting this rehab center, the hospital rehab center, up and running.
I know from working closely with you and the family, this has been really your dream and focus since the very beginning. So we're all quite excited and happy for you.
Thank you.
Well, Bobby, could you tell us more about how you feel, having lived your experience, about the importance of a hospital that's offering a home for those who have suffered with brain injuries?
Sure. Well, it's just been working as a patient advocate for 20 years, as everything that's being spoken about here today, this deterioration of healthcare, and, you know, decisions are being made, you know, as I already mentioned, when it comes to particularly brain injuries, if it's going to be extended care and it's going to be costly, well, they're going to do and pressure the family to either deny or withdraw care. And we see this happening all the time, and it seems to be only worsening. And there's some, believe me, there's some wonderful rehab centers out there, but I think with Terry's center, and particularly Catholic, with following the teachings of the church, we have something a little more different to offer. And I think families will understand and recognize that. I honestly believe if we could offer 5 beds, it's going to be very easy to fill those 5 beds. If we had 1,000 beds, it would, unfortunately, I think it would be just as easy to fill those 1,000 beds. There's a significant need to help people in these types of conditions.
So would you say, Bobby, it's at least to some degree a condemnation of how medical facilities around the country are taking care of these patients now, or not taking care of them, that this particular piece of the hospital is needed?
Well, sure. And as I said, I mean, we deal with the hard cases. We deal with the families that call us that are being pressured to stop treatment. We know there's some wonderful facilities out there, but we want to be able to respond to those families that are being pressured to stop treatment and be there for them, knowing that we're going to do everything we can to care for and properly treat their loved ones, and never make decisions based on what it might cost to care for these individuals. That's not going to be part of the equation. Their human dignity, focusing on the care that they need, the compassion and proper treatment is going to be our objective and our goal. You know, what's been obvious to us over the years is most of the families that call us for help are minorities, people that just don't have the resources to care for their loved ones. So hopefully that's something that will never have to be part of these families, you know, the issue if they contact us. That'll be something that they'll never have to consider. And we're going to do everything we can to provide the proper care for these individuals.
Yeah. I want to once again thank you, Jerry, Bobby, and Dr. George, for your participation. This is great to see a positive oasis within the medical community.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Brad.
Thanks for the work you guys do, too.
Well, Victor, this is a breath of fresh air to see what's on the horizon for the residents of Howell, Michigan, and actually all those in the region. I served on the board of directors for the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network and worked very closely with Bobby for years. And this was always the dream of Bobby and his family, to provide specialized care for patients who were otherwise just warehoused, or worse yet, had their life support discontinued.
Yeah, and to hear, Brad, you know, the combined expertise of all of the people involved in this hospital, it makes me think, just hearing their stories and hearing everything they bring to the table, could you imagine if all of our hospitals across the country would honor and respect life in the way that this one will?
And that's why I think there's going to be a waiting list of want-to-be doctors to get into this medical school. Because those who take their faith seriously, who will spend their entire careers dealing with patients in difficult circumstances from time to time, they want to be powerfully equipped to deal with those situations.
Yeah, and the demand, as you said, is going to be significant. We can only hope that this will be a turning point whenever it comes to American medicine. Hopefully this will inspire more of these colleges, more of these hospitals, to follow a similar path and actually honor and respect life. I want to encourage you, our listener, to go to our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find more resources from our guests, including Dr. George's book, and you can learn more information about the hospital so that you can share this news with your friends, family members, and others while hopefully promoting this idea across the country. Again, you can find that at our website, lifeissues.org, and be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.